How often do you compare yourself to others? It's easy to envy friends' lives on social media when you only see the good parts. But comparison is the thief of joy. Online therapy can help you focus on what you want instead of what others have, because your best life is always better than the idea of someone else's. Stop comparing and start living with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Blue Thistle.
My daughter is gone forever. I'm her mother. Now I have to speak for her. I'm her voice now.
From the creator of The Vanishing Point comes a new weekly true crime podcast, Floodlights.
We are carrying a lot of the burden of the pain and stress of losing such a beautiful person.
In the United States, there is a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people. In Floodlights, we'll be covering a new case every week.
And I will fight the rest of my life.
You'll also hear about other major crimes affecting tribal nations, from conspiracies to scandals created by an unfair legal system.
In Hoopa, we have the highest rate of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Floodlights investigates true crime stories impacting tribal nations, featuring interviews with survivors, advocates, and law enforcement. Floodlights, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We've all heard his songs at some point in our lives. They're occasionally on the radio, but mostly now they're just part of the soundtrack to some old movie. I first learned of Jerry Lee Lewis when I watched the movie about him. I was stunned when it got to the part where he slept with and then married his much younger cousin. A line from the movie that stuck out with me the most was when he thought he was taking his own underage cousin's virginity and said to her, "You don't move like no virgin." My friend and I, who were around 13 at that time and virgins ourselves, thought it was hilarious. We didn't even really know what he meant. It was much later that we learned that his younger cousin, who was played by Winona Ryder, was really only 13 when she married 22-year-old Jerry Lee Lewis. Yet somehow, he still went on to have a full and successful career, even though he literally groomed his incestual bride. But at least she survived her marriage to him. I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's see what my old mirror has to show us, shall we? Magic mirror on the wall. Who is the most rotten one of them all? Hi, hello, and howdy, my darlings, and welcome to Rotten to the Core. It's the not-so-evil queen, Joshua Waters, and I'm thrilled to have you join me today. Here we use my magical mirror and a little bit of humor to delve into the lives and actions of some rotten people in history, with the goal to extract valuable lessons from their mistakes that we can use in our lives today. I hope that by the end of each episode, you will feel more informed and enlightened about this old blue marble we share. How is everyone doing today? I have a camping trip in Michigan planned with some friends in a few weeks, and I can't wait to disconnect from everything and enjoy being free out in nature. I always think if I lived in the past, I would have disappeared into the woods years ago and became part of the local folklore. I often dream of selling everything I own, finding a little camper, and living the tiny life on the road, just existing and seeing all of the beauty nature has to offer every single day. Honestly, where I'm at in my life now, it has never sounded better. My only worry is, I may never want to stop. speaking of things that went on much longer than they should have. That brings me to our lesson today, the life and career of singer Jerry Lee Lewis, also known as The Killer. No, really, it was a nickname from childhood. How sweet. So let's dive on in. Like most of the country at the time, Jerry Lee Lewis grew up poor. He was born on September 29, 1935 in Louisiana in a farming family. His first experience with music began, like so many others, in church. His music style was even influenced by the music he heard there, mixed with the black musicians he heard. I believe they called it rockabilly, which sounds like a great drag king name. Hey, rockabilly! Now, even though he was vile as a person, Jerry Lee was a prodigy on the piano. Not only did he pick it up quickly, mostly self-taught by ear, but he could also play any song he heard, even after listening to it only once. His birthday was just a few days after mine, although many years before, and I can see how a Lieber prodigy could have turned out as bad as Jerry was. We do so often think highly of ourselves, even on our worst day, let alone when we get national attention. Around the age of 9, Jerry's dad recognized his son's talent and literally bet the farm on it. He mortgaged their house to buy Jerry his first piano. Talk about pressure for a young kid.
Here, son, you better do well at this or the family will be homeless and broke. Good luck.
It did pay off, though. Within a few years, around the age of 14, Jerry got his first public gig, and it was playing with a band at a car dealership during one of their sales. The young man wowed the crowd, and his fate was essentially sealed. Well, education really wasn't in Jerry's plans. He never liked it, and he wasn't very good at it anyway. His mom did enroll him in Southwest Bible Institute in Texas, but he was expelled shortly after for playing a dance version of My God is Real. Shortly after he was expelled, Jerry started playing every night he could at various bars and events in Mississippi. He was playing that newfangled rock and roll music that was all the buzz. In 1952, Jerry made his first demo records at the age of only 16. This was also the year he married his first wife, Dorothy Barton, a preacher's daughter. Their marriage lasted just over a year, and Jerry was already sleeping with his second wife, Sally Jane, before their divorce was finalized. Somehow, they got married while Jerry was still legally married to Dorothy. Sally even gave him his first two children, but it wasn't enough for the womanizing predator, and he divorced her in 1957. So, he is now barely 22 and has had two divorces under his belt. While we may not bat an eye at that today, can you just imagine how ruffled the feathers of people were back then? Not only was he singing about sex and playing that devil music, but he was also twice divorced. Hide your wives, hide your kids. They should have hidden their kids from Jerry Lee because his next wife was, in all forms of the definition, a child, and his first cousin, once removed. I really wasn't sure what that meant, so I looked it up. That means that they could be your first cousin's children or one of your parents' cousins. Coming from a large family where I have third and fourth cousins, there ain't no way in hell. And I'm gay. It's not like we would be having offspring like Jerry Lee and his incestual child bride, Myra Brown, did. They actually had two children together, the first being born when Myra was just 14. Where the hell were her parents? Yeah, sure, honey, you're 13. You're plenty old enough to go marry your cousin, be sexually assaulted, and then give birth. Well, their family may not have batted an eye at their familial pairing, but the public sure did. Their relationship actually almost ruined Jerry's career, and rightfully so. Their son together, Stephen, tragically died when he was only 3 when he drowned in their pool in 1962. And later that same year, Myra filed for divorce from Jerry. That poor girl. All before she was 18, she was groomed, sexually assaulted, and gave birth twice and lost one of them. The reason for the divorce filing, because she stated that she had been subject to every kind of physical and mental abuse imaginable. It'll come as no surprise to any of us, I'm sure, to learn that Jerry, the cousin-screwing pedophile, was also abusive to his wives and children. All of his wives said that he would beat, scream, and threaten them and the kids. There must have been something about him, though, even with that hairdo, that the ladies of the time couldn't get enough of. Ugh. Even his dirty laundry was aired in every magazine and paper you could think of. But he still kept getting married. Not to mention the countless girls he was abusing on the road. We don't even know about what things he was doing when he was away from home. I can only imagine. But I don't want to.
Bocas del Toro, Panama. A secluded seaside hideaway. Scott Maceda has no idea that his tropical haven is about to become his personal hell. A serial killer pretending to be a therapist.
Hulbert rents a room, and that's where he set up his business as a fake shrink.
Accusations of a gringo mafia.
Gun running, drugs.
A slaughtered family.
And then he goes back and he plants another bullet.
A killer on tape.
Hey man, I'm guilty. Everybody knows I'm a monster.
The law of the jungle is simple. Survive. I'm your host, Candace DeLong, from Treefort Media and Village Roadshow Entertainment Group. This is Natural Selection, Scott versus Wild Bill. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop weekly.
This podcast is brought to you by Blue Thistle.
My daughter's gone forever. I'm her mother. Now I have to speak for her. I'm her voice now.
From the creator of The Vanishing Point comes a new weekly true crime podcast, Floodlights.
We are carrying a lot of the burden of the pain and stress of losing such a beautiful person.
In the United States, there is a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people. In Floodlights, we'll be covering a new case every week.
And I will fight the rest of my life.
You'll also hear about other major crimes affecting tribal nations, from conspiracies to scandals created by an unfair legal system.
In Hoopa, we have the highest rate of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Floodlights investigates true crime stories impacting tribal nations, featuring interviews with survivors, advocates, and law enforcement.
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Floodlights, available wherever you get your podcasts.
After his divorce from his cousin, Jerry spent more time working and building up his booming music career, and traveling, all to further it. Surprisingly, he remained unmarried for almost 10 years and was probably spreading the clap to dozens of poor girls along the way. It wasn't until 1971 when he married his fourth wife, Jaren Pate, with whom he had another daughter with. So that's 4 wives and 5 children born out of them so far. Jaren actually filed for divorce from Jerry because of all the abuse and cheating, but sadly, she drowned in a friend's pool in 1982 before it was finalized. People who were alive back then Was drowning a lot more common? First his child, now his wife. It seems a little bit too sketchy for my taste. Well, then his fifth wife, Shawn Stevens, she was even more unlucky. He married her in 1982, shortly after the death of his last wife. But their marriage only lasted 77 days before she was found dead in a bedroom after one of Jerry's rambunctious parties. She was found by a maid the morning after, unresponsive, lying in a guest bedroom alone and covered up. Her official death was ruled as a methadone overdose, but there are many who suspect that Jerry murdered her, especially since they found bruises on her wrist and fresh cuts on Jerry's hands and arms. He was never charged with anything related to her death, so I'll leave that up to the court of public opinion. His next wife, lucky number 6, Carrie Lee Carver, who is still alive today. I know, I was surprised too. They got married in 1984 and actually stayed together for 21 years, a milestone in Jerry's marriage records. They had one child together, a son named after him. Well, love wasn't the only thing Jerry Lee was bad at. He also got into some trouble with a little venture called the Internal Revenue Service. He owed them over $2 million in back taxes, and they began seizing some of his property to pay it off. It got so bad that he even faced criminal charges of tax evasion. But he managed to get off when he filed for bankruptcy in 1988. After things were settled, Jerry moved his current wife and child to Ireland. He said it was for a new beginning, but many suspect he was just running from the IRS. They lived there for 4 years, and Jerry was even sued there when he failed to show up to a concert after accepting the check. In 1997, after all of his misdeeds with the IRS were put to bed, Jerry moved back to the U.S. and bought a ranch in Mississippi. He divorced Carrie in 2005, but Jerry wasn't done yet. Several years later, he married his seventh and final wife, Judith Brown, in 2012. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Brown? Well, that's his cousin's wife's maiden name. And you're right. Jerry's final bride was the ex-wife of Myra's brother. It was no blood relation, but still a little odd to marry your cousin's ex. Boy, I bet family reunions were more heated than a road during a heat wave. Ooh. Jerry Lee had it in his mind that he was above the law. Some even call him a sociopath because of his behavior and treatment of others. He also liked to drink heavily and was known to abuse other substances. There was one time when he was even arrested outside the gates of Graceland under the orders of Elvis Presley himself. Jerry had been drinking at a bar one night and someone foolishly gave him a gun. I say foolishly because Jerry had already accidentally shot two people in the past after fooling with a gun while intoxicated. One time, it was while he was drunk in a hotel room and he fired off his gun and it ricocheted and hit a man in his chest. The man survived, but don't give Jerry Lee a gun. The night of his arrest, he remembered that Elvis had asked him for a meeting, and Jerry must have been drunker than a skunk because he grabbed a bottle of champagne under one arm and a gun in the other and drove drunk in his new car to Graceland at 3 a.m. It didn't go well. Jerry made it to Graceland, but crashed into the gate because it was closed. No shit, it's 3 in the morning. This is why I don't like drinking very much. Personally, I don't enjoy being more stupid than I already am. Elvis actually watched the whole thing on his security cameras. And Jerry even tried to throw the bottle of booze out the car window. But he didn't realize the window was rolled up. And he not only broke the bottle, but broke the window as well. And then by the time police got there, he was covered in alcohol. No, sir, I wasn't drinking. When officers asked Elvis what he wanted them to do, he told them, lock him up, boys. That was only 9 months before Elvis was found dead. Even with all of his bad decisions and impulsive, never turn away from a fight attitude, Jerry Lee Lewis lived well into his 80s. He died at his home in Mississippi on February 28, 2019, of natural causes. His funeral was held in his hometown of Faraday, Louisiana, and was officiated by one of his cousins that he didn't marry, televangelist Jimmy Swaggart. More on him in the future. Today, Jerry's children and ex-wives, the ones who are still alive, are fighting to pay back all of the outstanding debt owed. Before his death, he even sued his oldest daughter, who was his former manager, and essentially cut ties with her altogether. Which, in my opinion, is probably the best thing he ever did for her. What did we learn from Jerry Lee Lewis? In this lesson, I didn't want to cover much of his music career, and instead put the focus on his personal life. I mean, I've already seen the movie about his music. I wanted the tea about his life and his wives. The movie was pretty whitewashed, and even more so, his website. Let me know what you thought about Jerry Lee Lewis, and if you happen to have been alive back then, spill the tea. What do you know? What do you remember? And on that note, it brings us to the end of our lesson today, my darlings. So let's cleanse ourselves, and I'll let you be off on your next adventure. Just take a deep breath and ground yourself in the here and now. May my mind, body, and spirit communicate clearly, allowing me to live in harmony with myself and those around me. Let any negative thoughts within me fade away, leaving only positivity and love. May I move forward with clarity and alignment with my highest self, allowing ease and flow to guide me toward my greatest desires. May I always remember that I am in constant connection and co-creation with Source. So be it. Thank you for supporting Rotten to the Core. Let's catch up again next time. And in the meantime, be happy, find peace, and don't hurt anyone. I'd love to hear what you thought about Jerry Lee Lewis and what lessons you learned on any one of my socials. If you enjoy Rotten to the Core, please follow me on Instagram or join me on Patreon. Both of those are at It's Rotten to the Core. It was lovely spending time with you today. Have a fantastic day, my darlings. I'll talk at you next time. Bye.
This podcast is brought to you by Blue Thistle.
My daughter's gone forever. I'm her mother. Now I have to speak for her. I'm her voice now.
From the creator of The Vanishing Point comes a new weekly true crime podcast, Floodlights.
We are carrying a lot of the burden of the pain and stress of losing such a beautiful person.
In the United States, there is a crisis of missing and murdered Indigenous people. In Floodlights, we'll be covering a new case every week.
And I will fight the rest of my life.
You'll also hear about other major crimes affecting tribal nations, from conspiracies to scandals created by an unfair legal system.
In Hoopa, we have the highest rate of missing and murdered Indigenous women.
Floodlights investigates true crime stories impacting tribal nations, featuring interviews with survivors, advocates, and law enforcement.
What do we want?
Justice!
What do we want?
Now!
What do we want?
Floodlights, available wherever you get your podcasts.